Thank you very much, guys. It's very exciting to be here. And I was asked to speak about relationships, the topic of relationships, relationships in general, with family, with friends, business relationships, and specifically, I'll speak a little bit about marriage. And the truth is, I just finished my second book. It's going to print this week, and it's called Your Wife Yourself. It's a husband's guide to a successful marriage. That's the topic. So that's something that I'm sensitive to. My wife makes me. And I'm trying to work and try to bring out and try to work together with you today to become sensitive to certain areas which have helped me tremendously in my own life. And I hope will have some impact with you. And most of the time when we speak about relationships, people discuss their issues, right? Specifically with a man and a woman, right? They're very different. Men and women are very different, different upbringings, different sensitivities, different needs. And they're coming from different worlds, and you have to try to jive, make it together, unite. It's very difficult. So often we speak about, what do I do when she needs that and I don't want it? And how do I go ahead and resolve difficulties and issues that we have? Basically, it's learning how to tread water, how to live in a relationship with a business partner, with a friend, the family, without causing trouble. I want to skip all of that. If we had maybe five or seven lessons, we would maybe work with that as well. I want to skip all of that for a minute and fast forward to another aspect, which is not, I don't find it spoken about enough, and when I learned about it, it helped my own relationships, and that is becoming a unit, becoming one entity. And I'll start off with a story about a great rabbi who was very righteous. He lived during the British Mandate over here in Palestine before Israel became a state. His name was Rabbi Levin. And he was famous while he was alive for going to jails, for going to hospitals with people that had leprosy, places that no one wanted to visit. And he would go to these inmates, to the Jewish inmates, again, they're under British rule, and he would bring them food, he would try to uplift them, he would try to help them. He was known as the Chesed Rabbi, that rabbi of kindness, the one that would go beyond what other people maybe would have done to try to go ahead and reach out to them. That's what he became famous for. No one knew about his scholarship, his level of knowledge of the Torah, that after he passed away, they found tons of manuscripts that he had written, all about commentaries all over the place, but no one knew about that while he was alive. He was known about going out to people that really no one else was looking out for and try to help them out. Okay. The story goes as follows. He went to the podiatrist with his wife. His wife had an infection on her foot, and they went to the podiatrist, and the doctor asked, "Why are you here?" And he responded, "Our foot hurts." Okay? The way he viewed his relationship with his wife is that it was our. It was our, it's not her foot, and I'm just bringing her here, I'm her chaperone. It's our foot. Her pain is my pain. Her joy is my joy. When we achieve unity in a relationship, and this is very difficult to do, so then everything about us is one. And the more we work towards that, the more we're able to grow and grow and grow, become more one. Just like I'd never leave my left arm, or if I was upset at my left arm, I would never punch it with my right arm. We don't do crazy things like that. So too, we would never yell at the other person in the relationship. We would never make fun of them. We would always be one with that person. It's an incredible level. It's a little bit lofty, but it's awesome. And if we could get there, then we're in very, very good shape, and we could reap the benefits of every relationship that we're involved in. Okay, so how do you get there? How in the world do you do that? Take marriage, for example. Okay, I left the house this morning at 8 o'clock. I hope that I'm going to get home tonight sometime before 8 o'clock. Unclear, depending on what the schedule looks like today. And my wife, she has her job, and she has what she's doing from 8 o'clock in the morning till whatever time. So most of our lives, we're apart from one another. Yes, we go on vacation, and we spend time together, and we talk to each other, etc. But how much time are we actually working in close proximity to one another? Very small. Right? I'm sure we all have that with people that we are very close to in our relationships. It could be right now. All the men are over here. We all have people that we're in relationships with back at home, and we're far apart. So how in the world do you become a unit if you're here eating fruit, rugelach, and having a great time, and whoever you want to have that unity with is not. How do you do that? Okay, so the first step is sharing. Sharing is the first step to become a unit. And there are three different levels of sharing. Level number one of sharing is expressing your experiences, sharing your experiences, your thoughts, and your feelings with the other person. Now I'm just going to use my wife for a minute. It's easier for me to, it'll be easier for us to understand. Okay? I want to share my feelings, emotions, experiences with my wife. Why do I want to do that? Because I need to bring her into my world. If I'm working 9 to 5 and she's working 9 to 5 and we're separate and then we come back and then we start talking about shopping or repairs in the home or the children or whatever it is. So from 9 to 5, we're really separate. That's not good. How do you become a unit if for so many hours a day you're separate? I have to bring the other person into my life, into my world. How do I do that? I have to share what happened over the course of the day. Experiences. Oh, I met this friend that I haven't seen in a long time. It was so good to see him. Or I made an awesome trade in the stock market. And the feelings that go along with that experience. I felt so good. You want her to feel my experiences, feel my emotions. I was a little down today. I was happy today. I was at the Kotel and I just felt something. It's not enough to say, oh, went to the Kotel. Take a picture, send it on Facebook, done. You share that experience, but then to also share the emotion that went together with that experience, that brings her into our world. Okay. Now, men have a difficulty with this. Okay? We're all men here, so it's much easier. Sometimes I have to speak to a co-ed group, it gets a little complicated, but we could speak straight. I have difficulty with this. Most men have difficulty with this for two reasons. One is that most of us, at the end of the day, if you say, so what did you do today? We'd have to like think for a minute. what exactly did I do? It was a long day. No, we can mention, oh, I went here, I went there in 3 seconds, right? But it's hard for us to even be cognizant of all those experiences that we had in the course of the day. And even if we were aware of what happened, it's not so manly to go ahead and share those things. If it's important, so then yeah, we'll go share it, right? But just to express, men aren't so good about it. It's difficult for us. And that comes up in my family. I like speaking about this. My kids in Israel, the way it works is my son, he goes to school from 7:30, 7:45 till 5:45, 6 o'clock. He comes, it's a long day. The girls have a much shorter day, and in the afternoon they have a lot of extracurricular activities. Okay, one plays the guitar, one plays the flute, one goes to dance, etc. Okay, so I have a lot of girls and a couple boys. So my girls come home, right, again, 8 to 1 they're in school, and 5 hours, and I ask them, so how was school today? And you get 5 hours play-by-play of what happened. And you know, with one daughter specifically, if there are 15 minutes that she doesn't tell you about, that's because she got in trouble and she's specifically leaving that out. But you get the whole thing. This person did this, this person did this. My teacher told us that there's going to be a trip. You get the whole shebang. Even things that you're totally not interested in. You have to sit there and listen and listen and listen and listen. Okay. My son comes home at a much longer day, right? So how's your day? Good. Did you learn anything? Yeah. Anything different than yesterday? No. And that's it. He's off on the couch reading, playing, whatever. That's the whole thing. Right, so it starts very young. We're talking about 7-year-olds already have this issue. It's not like a thing that we grow into. It's an issue that we were born with. Okay, that's a manly issue. We're men. Right? When we're men, that's our problem. It's hard for us to be cognizant of what even goes on during our day, especially the mundane stuff, and then to take that experience and then go share with someone, your friend, your other manly friend. Why in the world are you telling me this? It's ridiculous, right? We're not into that. We're not used to that. To go ahead and share those things. But when it comes to trying to achieve a unit with another person, if you want your wife to really be in your world, you got to do it. You got to do it. So we have to start to habituate ourselves to all these different experiences. When I heard about this originally, I was horrible at this. I'm still not great. We're getting better. But I used to walk around with like a piece of paper in my pocket, and if something would happen, I'd write it down so I remember later on. You know, and then before I go home, I'd still tell my wife, so what happened today? Oh, you have no idea. No. And then I'd start going ahead and then telling her what happened. That's what I would do. And I got much better at it. I started becoming much more sensitive to different things that would happen to me over the course of the day that I could go ahead and share with. Okay? And then you have to do it. Yeah, it's not manly, it's not cool, it's not the norm, but your wife is going to really appreciate to hear what's going on in your life. She'll feel part of what happened to you from 9 to 5. Again, you don't have to do like my daughters. You don't have to give the 9:01, 9:03, 9:07, 10:04. You don't have to give the whole 8 hours, 9 hours, whatever your day is. But if you give different highlights, again, not just what you saw or what you did, but how you felt, different experiences, highs and lows. I've been trying to make a certain deal for so long, and finally I got that appointment. Finally, I felt so good. That extra "I felt so good" brings her into your world. Oh, wow, he felt good today. He had an upbeat day. That's very, very helpful and important. Yeah.
You shouldn't just hand her the list.
Yeah.
have your secretary email it to her. You know, just,
That'd be great. Save a lot of time. Okay. So that's level one. Level one of sharing is noticing your experiences, letting her know that, and then also the emotions that went along with those experiences. Okay? There's a side point now, by the way. The ideal is to keep that positive. In order for a relationship to grow, and we'll speak more about that at the end, how do you grow together when people have different experiences, the majority has to be positive. If she's listening to you about, oh, this is bad, and this was bad, and this was bad, it's very hard to grow together. It's very hard to connect in that way. Now, it's important. You have to be able to vent, and you have to have that person that you're a unit with, right? Your right arm does know that your left arm is in pain. That's important, right? But it has to be with a certain ratio, with the majority being positive. Okay, side point. Level two. Level two of sharing, this is much more difficult, okay, for men again. And that is for the person to be a partner in your success. Okay. Now, most of the time when I say this over, people think I'm crazy. My wife is a partner in my success. So I'll take my brother, for example. My brother lives in New York. He's a pediatric cardiologist. My sister-in-law is scared of blood, and she sees blood, she faints. Okay. So how in the world is my sister-in-law going to be a partner in my brother's success because he treated some kid with a heart problem? She, even if he talks about it, she gets all like this. Okay? So how's she a partner in his success? Or, for example, sometimes in yeshiva we have this problem. A couple gets married and he's learning in yeshiva and he says, my wife doesn't even know what a Talmud looks like. You know, how in the world, I had a good day today and I learned very well, I learned something new. How in the world is she going to become a partner in my success? How are you a partner in the other person's success if you're not working together in the same office, in the same business? How does that happen? How does she become a partner in my success? Okay. Before I answer that question, I'd like to express the... Well, okay, we'll backtrack. The answer is as follows. The answer is that there are a lot of energies that are going into our success on a daily basis. Okay? Before I explain what that means, I have a paper here. Okay? We're gonna pass this around. Okay? It has a number 1 to 10. I'm going to give 60 seconds, no more, to fill in 10 different people or things that already today, we're not even at 11 o'clock yet, already today had a part of your success so far today. Okay? I'll tell you when to go. Don't cheat. Okay? We're looking for 10 people or things that, let's say today you already had a good class, you had something, whatever, that was good for you. 10 different energies, people, things that played a direct role in your success so far today. And you know, if you want to make it easier, we'll do it from since the time you got to this trip till now. Okay? By the way, before you start, most people usually get to number 4 and that's it. So you shouldn't feel bad if you can't get 10. Ready? On your marks, get set, go. 15 seconds. Five, four, three, two, one. Okay. Did anyone get 10?
Come on, another 2.
Yes. Okay. So, yeah. Great. Okay. Any? Can, maybe we could share. Some throw out some exciting ones. Go.
An interaction with my wife, which is fine.
Okay. Great. Okay. But is your wife here?
No.
So how is that? How is that direct helpful with your in your success here?
It put my mind at ease or something.
Beautiful. Most people are not able to appreciate that. Very good.
Alarm.
Very good. Okay, so excellent. So these are two. Let's hone on those for a minute. You didn't hear what he said. I'll repeat it. What's your name?
Steve.
Steve said that even though his wife isn't here, but because he had a positive conversation with her, that calmed his mind, it gave him a peace of mind, that he was then able to go into, let's say, a class and learn something or have a positive interaction here. Most people, when I give this to my students, I say, so who is a positive person today? So they'll say, oh, it was my teacher, it was my study partner. They usually get 2 or 3 or 4, and that's it. I had 2 classes, I had 2 teachers, right? Most people don't look outside of the immediate sphere of their influence. For example, the fact that you know that tonight, let's say you're going somewhere and you're going to see someone, so that allows you over the course of today to be more successful because you're excited about what's going to come about. So you might not even have that interaction yet, but the fact that you know that that's going to happen has a direct result on your success today. Or last night, I spoke to my wife, or last night I spoke to someone that made me feel really good. And that allowed my mind to be at peace, to be at ease, for me to concentrate better, for me to learn better, to be able to work better on my business. Okay, my wife sometimes takes a peanut butter sandwich, right? We all know you don't have to be the best cook in the world to make a peanut butter sandwich, right? And she goes and says, David, take it. Take it. I said, I don't need it. I don't need it. Take it. She stuffs it in my bag. Okay, so then what happens? You have a lunch break, 12 to 1. 12 to 1, you have a lunch break, right? And you had a tough morning, you can have a tough afternoon. You have a break now for an hour. You could either at 12 o'clock go down the stairs of your office, 20 flights to the closest restaurant or cafeteria, buy a sandwich, buy something, go back upstairs, lock your door, and 15 minutes left to eat before your 1 o'clock appointment. Or at 12 o'clock, you could lock your door, eat your peanut butter sandwich for 5 minutes, and then have 55 minutes to relax. Put your head down, watch something on the computer, call someone, right? You could do a lot of things which put your mind to rest that allows the entire afternoon to be successful. So that peanut butter sandwich, which anyone in the entire world could make, the fact that she put it into my bag and gave me that opportunity of 55 minutes to relax, that enabled me to be more successful the entire afternoon. So when my brother comes home at night, and his wife gives him a certain ambiance, a certain smile when he walks through the door, makes him feel good. After a long, stressful day, he's relaxed. The next day, he's able to be more successful. I tell my students with their roommates, if you have a roommate that after you're sleeping, this applies to wives as well, come, you walk in the house and she or he goes ahead and makes a lot of noise, and wakes you up, then the next day you're going to be tired. You're still going to have to wake up the same time to make your meeting and to get where you have to get to. But if you're going to be tired, it's going to be extremely difficult to be on the ball the entire day and be as successful. The fact that you have a roommate who's very sensitive and allows you to go to sleep, or if your wife has something very important that she needs to speak to you about, and you tell her, tomorrow morning I have a very important deal, a very important meeting, 9 o'clock, I really got to be fresh, I really got to go to sleep. And you say, I know it's really important, can we wait till tomorrow? She says, yes, no problem. So now, because she let you go to sleep, she has something to tell you, and the rest of the day you're able to be successful, when you get home that night, you have to say, wow, again, share your experience. I made a deal. I had a great meeting that I was waiting for who knows how long. I was successful. It felt so good, and it was because of you. It was because of you. Because you allowed me to have that good night's sleep, I was on the ball, sharper. I was able to know how to answer when I needed to answer. It was all because of you. You make that person a partner in your success. The chef in yeshiva always tells me, certain points, and he goes, did you give that class on relationships again? I said, yeah, how do you know? He said, because every single guy came over to me and told me, thank you for such a good lunch. My whole afternoon was better because of you. But that's really what it is. The chef, I always tell the guys, the chef, how can you not just to say thank you. Tell him that it's because of him that you're learning well, that you're successful, that you're growing. It's all, there's so many people, and the better we get at this, we could do 20 in 10 minutes. It could be someone you spoke to 2 weeks ago. It could be the person that arranged the trip. It could be the person that booked the flight. It could be the person that's running the trip. There's so many people in our world that are having direct influences on our successes that there are a lot of partners in our success. Now, again, for men, this is difficult. Twofold. First of all, it's very hard for us to say, look, I went to medical school for 11 years. Okay, I know how to treat this kid with a heart problem. My wife doesn't know anything about it. Don't tell me it's about her. We have egos. We have certain things that's our. We were trained in the finance. We know how to trade the stocks. We know this. We know that. It's us. We were the ones that were successful. So it's very hard for us to allow other people to feel part of that. And then to go express that, that's a whole other level. Right? Anyway, we're not good at expressing. So that's another thing that we have to work on as men to notice, to try to work on different sensitivities to know who are the different energies, who are the people that are helping us directly succeed in our lives, and then, if we want to create a unit with them, become partners with them. Tell them that they're part of it. Tell them it's because of them. They'll feel connected. Now, the level one, they knew what was going on in my life. They knew what was going on in my heart. They knew what was going on in my mind. Level two is they feel now that they're partners with me. They feel that they're working together with me. Okay. Level three is the most difficult. This is really hard. And this applies to all different relationships. I think everyone in the world struggles with this. And that is letting the other person share. Level one and level two was about me sharing my experiences, my emotions. Level two, that the other person is a partner in my success. I got to share that with them, bring them in, let them become that partner. Level three is letting the other person share. To give the following example, I have a one-year-old, okay? He started walking, very nice. So my wife takes him to the store to go ahead and buy his first pair of shoes. And she calls me up, she says, oh, David, he should have been there. He put on his shoes, and he walked across the store, and he fell down in the middle, and then he picked himself up, and he continued to the, and when he got to the other end, everyone clapped. It was so cute, he was so proud of himself. Oh, and you gotta see the shoe, it's gray, with a little bear on the back corner, and you're sitting there, and all you wanna ask is, how much extra did the bear cost? Right? Yeah, it was a nice story, really cute, very nice, I see the picture. Did you pay extra for that bear or not? You know, and did you buy a matching outfit afterwards because you felt so good about it? That's all I care about, right? Okay. And so that's what's going through our minds. We have zero interest in hearing some, okay, and some of us might like the shoes, so then you'll go with the colors of the drapes, right? We all have our thing. We're not interested in it. She wants to tell us all about it, and we're not interested. This could destroy any relationship. And again, it's not just with a husband and wife. It's with anyone you want to have a relationship with. If you don't let the other person share, then you can't become one. And I want to stress this the following story. There was a great rabbi. His name was Rabbi Orbach. He actually lived a 15, 20-minute walk away from here. And he was the leading rabbi of 30, 40 years ago. People from all walks of life would go to meet him. At his wife's funeral, there's a custom at funerals that you ask forgiveness from the deceased. Maybe we didn't treat you properly, like one last, we're sorry. I love you, we're sorry. And he got up there in front of thousands of people. I think tens of thousands of people. And he said, there's a custom to ask forgiveness from the deceased. I just want to say that I have nothing to ask forgiveness from my wife for, because we never did anything that would require to ask forgiveness from. Okay, now take that story in a vacuum. I made the same face when I heard that. Give me a break, you know. Okay, so I keep that in the vacuum. I thought that was a nice story. He must be the super righteous person. Nothing to do with me. I don't even know why you told me this story. Okay, put it on the side. Next story. Rabbi Orbach was speaking to a student in his yeshiva and giving him some tips before he gets married. How to be a good husband. Everyone needs that. Okay. 6 months into the marriage, the student came to the rabbi, and the rabbi said to him, so how's the marriage going? Oh, great. Great. We have no disagreements, nothing. Everything's great. So he said, oh, did your wife die? So the guy looked at him like, what are we doing? No, I just told you, everything's great. No disagreements, nothing, everything is smooth. He said, he asked again, did your wife die? So the student obviously looked perplexed. Rabbi, I'm just being like you. You went ahead and you said that, you know, you never had any disagreements, you never had to ask forgiveness from your wife. I'm doing the exact same way. Everything is great. So he said, I never ever said anything like that. I never said we didn't disagree. How could you not disagree? You're a man. She's a woman. You're from different backgrounds. You have different needs, different feelings. You're two different people. How could you not disagree? The only way you cannot disagree is if one of the two people is scared to be open, honest, and share their feelings. They're always scared. What's he going to say if I tell him that I want to do this? He might get upset at me. So I'm like, I'll be quiet. If she's scared of you, of your response, she doesn't want to anger you. It's not worth it. She makes a calculation in her head. It's better I don't say this and everything will be okay. If she's not sharing this, it's as if your wife is dead. You have no relationship. What I said was that even when we disagreed, and we disagreed plenty, I didn't yell at her. I didn't hit her. I didn't ignore her. I didn't give her a cold shoulder. I didn't do anything wrong that required to ask forgiveness. There is nothing wrong at all with disagreeing. On the contrary, that means that you have a rocking relationship. It's running. It's moving. It's fresh. You're able to talk. You're able to be open. You're able to share your feelings with one another. So if we don't allow that other person in the relationship to share, if we shut them up, then we're really stabbing the relationship right in the center, and we're not allowing that unit to develop. So the question is, how in the world do you let someone share and you don't sit there and forget about falling asleep? Okay, that we could work on. But actually look interested. How do you look interested in something that you're not interested in? How does that work? Okay. So here's the secret, and it actually is related to a certain law regarding the laws of Shabbat. And that is as follows. On Shabbos, we try to enjoy the Shabbat as much as possible. That's the goal. You have to pay more money for food and good company and nice clothing. We want to enjoy. That's what it's about. Okay. So because of that, we're instructed that don't talk about things you don't like to talk about. If it's going to get you really upset, don't talk about that on Shabbat. Try to keep it about the things that you enjoy talking about. It's supposed to be fun, exciting. Okay. So here's the following question. Let's say I have guests at my table, and my guests like to speak about the Golden State Warriors. Anyone following? What's going on? Yeah, okay, we're good. Okay, Golden State Warriors. They're the best, and they wanna speak about that and talk about sports. And I hate sports, or I like a different team, whatever it is. But I don't want to talk about sports. So for me to speak about sports is going to be really upset. I'm going to start yelling and stuff like that. And it's going to ruin my Shabbat, and therefore I'm not supposed to speak about it. But the other guy loves speaking about how Steph Curry just came back, and he's hitting threes from all over the place, and this is the best thing that ever happened to the world. He's in it. He likes it. This is what he wants to speak about. Is it permitted for me to then go ahead and speak about that topic, and we'll get insert again, any topic that you want to insert, with my guest? So what would you say? Yes. But why? Why would it be okay? For me, I'm going to get upset. It's going to bother me. Why would it be okay?
Because you're giving him that opportunity instead of thinking about what you need about.
Oh, beautiful. So the answer is, it's not just, sometimes people say yes because, look, you're supposed to be a good host. And even though you're going to be upset, but be a good host. That's not the answer, because again, you're going to be upset. The real answer is because you're not going to be upset. Just like I was willing to shell out the money to buy the nice food for my guest, it's going to make me happy knowing that he's speaking about something that's making him happy. When we take ourselves out of the details of the conversation and we look at the art of conversation, so then, wow, this is awesome. We're having a great conversation. He's happy, I'm happy, she's happy, I'm happy. We're happy. We're having time together that we're happy about. That's great. But if we start looking at the details, what am I getting out of this right now? What that she's telling me, am I gaining from this? More knowledge, more experience. What am I, what's in for me? So then, yeah, this thing is boring. What do I care about the shoes? What do I care about the drapes? What do I care about the color of the sofas? I don't care about this stuff. I'm not getting anything out of it, so I'm upset. But when we want to let the other person share in a relationship, we take ourselves out of the details and we look at the art of the conversation. And that's easy. And it's easy to be genuine because you're really happy to be... I'm happy to sit here and listen to you talk because it makes me so happy that you're happy. It makes me so happy seeing how you're getting energetic as you're telling me about what's going on in your life. This is awesome. Continue. This is great. The same thing is with vacations. I always, when I grew up, I had a dream that my family, we used to go to Vail, Colorado every single winter, and it was clear that the person that I was going to marry, was going to be a skier. I was like, number one, and number two, I want to have good character traits, etc. But number one, you know, she had to be able to ski, we are going to Vail. This is going to be very important. Okay, then you marry someone who never went skiing in their lives, and you know, they're into Florida. This does not work. You know, like she's into that heat. And so you start explaining to her, well, you know, on Vail, if you don't put on suntan lotion, you could get burnt. It's very hot up there, which is true. You give them the whole story, but they're not buying it. There's snow. They don't understand. Anyone who hasn't been there does not understand how it could be hot, warm over there, and there's snow all over the place. Okay, so it doesn't work. So now you have a big problem. She wants to go for vacation to Florida, Puerto Rico, whatever it is, and you want to go skiing. That's a serious problem in a relationship, especially if you want to become one. So the answer to that is that's an immature calculation. Because if the point of the vacation is because you want to go skiing and you need someone to ski with, so go with your male friends, go with other people. Don't go. You don't have to go with the person that you have that relationship with. You go on a ski trip. Come on a trip to Israel, right? You could do those things. That's if you want to look at what's good for you right now. But if you want to go on a vacation together, so that together we could have an experience of growth, we could have something different than our immediate communities, other scenery will bring up certain emotions, certain feelings, certain discussions. I want to bring my kids to Disney World. I don't want to go to Disney World, but I'm going because the family is going. It's much easier for us to relate to that when it comes to our children. But when it comes to our wife, like, oh, come on, like, give me a break. No, it's the same thing. It should not matter where you're going on vacation if the point of the vacation is to go with a bonding experience. Okay, it's always can't hurt to have a good time also, so you want to work that out. But the goal is not to look at the details, but at the end of the day says, this was an incredible vacation because I got to spend it with you. And that's how you allow people to genuinely share. You could sit there, you could listen to them talk for hours and hours and hours. And you could be happy because the other person cares. Take ourselves out of the situation and let them share. Okay, so to review, the three levels of sharing. Level one is that we share our experiences and our emotions that went together with those experiences. Let the other person into our lives. We're not living two separate lives. Yes, we're not next to each other all the time. It is physically separate, but they're in our lives. They know what goes on in our lives. They know what we think. They know what we experience. Level two is we make the other person a partner in our success. And that could be anyone. Different people that allowed us to be successful today, this week, this year, whatever it is. We go ahead, we notice it, and then we go ahead and we relay it to them, be open, express, and it's okay that it's not good for our ego, but it lets them feel that they are partners in our success. Level three is that we go ahead and let the other person share, even things that we are not interested in at all. How do we go about and do that? Because we look at the conversation, the fact that we're having positive conversation, the other person's happy to share, excited to share, and I want that, that makes me feel good. So I'm sitting there listening about something I don't want to listen to, but I'm feeling really good about it because the other person is sharing. And then the other person is able to connect to us and become a unit with us as well. Okay. Now we're going to fast forward. Yeah?
Sorry, I just want to go back to the third aspect of letting others share. And something that you said before, you know, the example you gave was a conversation that should be having on Shabbat. How do you reconcile something that is inherently against your values, or even against halakhic values, versus to the point of, I want to make you happy because that's going to make me happy.
That's a very good example.
But that's part of a relationship, is making sure one, before you get into your values, that your values change.
That's correct. Right. Meaning, I'm going to tell another story that happened actually to one of the students here. There was a student whose father was very into horses and restaurants. That's, wherever he traveled all over the world, wherever he went to watch the horse races and he wanted to go to the best restaurants. That's what he was into. The kid wasn't so excited about it. The kid was in Israel and the father forgot where it was. And every time he'd come to visit, it was a disaster. Because every time the father came, he wanted to go to all these restaurants that the kid wasn't really interested in going to. And he had to go to the horses always, which the kid wasn't interested in. And the relationship, which at one point was pretty decent, started drifting away and away and further and further away. So gave the advice to this student that, what do you care about going to the horses. I hate watching the horses. What a waste of time. I said, who cares? Forget the horses. You're going to sit next to your father and enjoy spending time with your dad. Who cares what you're watching and what you're doing? It doesn't make a difference. Go to the restaurant. You don't have to pig out. He was very into nutrition and dieting. So you order a salad, order something else. You don't have to eat all the steaks, etc. that they're serving. But that's not the point. The point is you're going there to hang out with your dad and spend time with him. He's like, oh, that's interesting. That's easy. And he started doing that. And he said the relationship became better than it ever was before. Because it wasn't about what my dad wanted. Dad wants to do that. Okay, I'll go with him. And we'll go ahead and do that. So when you're able to enter into that other person's world, you're right. There's red lines. Everyone has to have red lines in their life. When there's something wrong and there's something against your values, which is inappropriate. And then you have to either discuss with them why you don't feel comfortable and try to find some other area where they would want to share. But there's usually a very large range of things that we're not interested in that we could go ahead and speak to the person about. So you have to try to figure out what that is. For example, I have an uncle that is heavily invested in the stock market. And he lives in Connecticut, and when he comes to visit once a year, maybe, he likes to talk to me about the stock market. So I'm not so invested in the stock market. Maybe I wish I was, but at all times that I think he might call me or that he's coming to visit, I'm holding in where Apple is holding, IBM is holding, Google is holding, why Apple split 7 times and Google only split 2 times, and who caused what. I know the whole thing. And I'm going to speak to him about all those things. Because I want to go into his turf to speak about those. And he loves talking about it. He starts giving me advice. And he says, oh, you should buy this. And, well, I can't afford it. And so, oh, whatever. So we start talking about those things. But I go into his world. And I actually spend time beforehand researching what I could speak about with him that he's interested in. Right? Nowadays, it's not so difficult to find what people are interested in online. You can figure it out pretty easily. And you're able to go into their world and talk to them. Because the goal is not what am I getting out of the conversation, but to be able to spend that time together, right? And then again, if they're red lines, then they're red lines. I'm talking about much more normal cases where we could find that range of how to go back and do that. Okay, we have 5 minutes left. Try to move over to another area, which really needs a whole other session, and that is growing together with the person, okay? What happens if you have these experiences, and you come, let's say, for example, on this trip, okay? And you hear some interesting class about being more truthful. I'm just making it up. And therefore, you say, I really should be, well, let's take an easier example. I become more sensitive to my speech. How should I speak? I shouldn't speak not nicely about other people, etc. I become more sensitive to that. Hear a good story about it, I don't know. And I want to become more sensitive about it. So now I had that experience, and my wife or the other person in my relationship that I want to become one with didn't have that experience. So how do you go about, besides sharing is crucial, right? But how do I go about making it that we're both growing together? Right, if you're a unit, and my left arm is growing, and my right arm isn't, then we have a big problem, and it looks funny, right? That's not good. We have to grow together. If we become more sensitive to something, we have to make sure that whoever we want to be in our unit is growing together with us. So how do you do that? So first of all, it's to share. It's not to criticize. Criticizing is the worst thing that anyone could ever do in any shape or form. I could give you a rule book of criticism if you want that I put together. A whole series of steps that a person should go through before ever criticizing anyone, especially one's wife. So it kills a marriage, criticism, and it's almost never needed. You know, many times the men think that it is needed, okay, but it's not. That's not the way to go. How do you go ahead and influence into the unit positive growth? Okay. Answer number one is leading by example. The Talmud tells a story of a rabbi, his name is Rabbi Yanai, who had a tree in his backyard, and the tree hung over into the public domain. Okay, no one ever said anything to him about it. Everything was okay. It was a beautiful tree. One day, a guy came to him and said that he also has a tree, called Jack. Jack also has a tree, and hanging over into the public domain, and the public are calling and knocking on his door saying, cut down this tree, it's bothering us. We're walking down the sidewalk and the tree is hanging over. We don't want it, get it out of here. It's in his backyard, just hanging over. He came to the rabbi, he said, Rabbi, do I have to cut down the tree? And the rabbi said, come back tomorrow and I'll give you an answer. Okay, Jack leaves. The rabbi calls his helper and says, look, go to my backyard, cut down my tree right now. Sure? Yeah, cut it down. Okay. The next day, Jack comes back and he says, so rabbi, do I have to cut down the tree, which I really want, or not? And the rabbi says, unfortunately, I have to tell you, yes, you have to cut down the tree. It's bothering the people in the public. You got to cut it. He says, but rabbi, you have a tree. He says, no, I don't. Go look in my backyard. You'll see I no longer have a tree. So the Talmud actually asks, why did the rabbi have to do that? Why did the rabbi just say, look, you have to cut down your tree, and I'll cut mine also? And the Gemara says, the Talmud says, that because even if the rabbi's most trustworthy person said it, doesn't work. You gotta lead by example. You have to show that this is what you believe in, for real, not just speak about it and preach it, and then other people will be able to follow. If you come home and you say that I now speak in a more fine way, a refined way, people around you are going to notice it. You stop using certain words or you speak bad-mouthing someone, people will notice the change. And when they notice a change on you, it's going to be much easier for other people to then say, oh, well, he's doing it, I should also speak that way. That's the first level. It doesn't help to preach it. It doesn't help to be level one of sharing. That's not going to do it. It has to be by example. Okay? That's number one. Number two, in the last 2 minutes, number two is as follows. The Talmud talks about, it used to happen right here in the times of the temple, they would always sanctify the moon and say that this is the first day of the month. The months, the calendar, the Jewish calendar was based on the courts here in Jerusalem setting when the first of the month was, and it was based on seeing the moon, seeing the new moon. Okay. They would have witnesses that would travel and come to tell them, we saw the new moon. And they would ask them questions. Did it look like this? Did it look like this? They were actually experts in how the moon was supposed to look at that time of the month. And they would go ahead and talk to them about it. And they would make a judgment based on it. It's a fascinating topic. And the Talmud says something very, if I could say it, strange or weird. Okay, it says as follows. It says, if the witnesses would come and say that the sun was facing the concave part of the moon. The concavity of the moon is the part that you don't see. Okay, this is the moon over here, and this is the black part. Okay, if the sun was over here, the sun was facing the concave part of the moon, you know that the witnesses are not telling the truth, because, now if we would insert the reason, the answer is because the moon reflects the sun, and it's impossible that the black part of the moon is facing, that's what we would have written. The Talmud doesn't say that. The Talmud says the reason is because, la'olam, forever, the sun never faced the pigima, is the Hebrew word, which normally has a negative connotation. It means the thing that's lacking in the moon. The sun never faced the lacking part of the moon, because it would embarrass the moon. That's what the Talmud says. What are you talking about? What does it mean? So the Baal Shem Tov, who's the founder of the Hasidic movement, a very, very powerful holy person, explained that Talmud is coming to hint the following idea. He said that the sun represents a person who's influencing. The moon represents the one who is being influenced. When someone is coming to influence someone else, they can never, la'olam, forever, they can never see the lacking part of the person they're trying to influence. Because if they look at what's negative, if they look at the whole, so that will cause the person to be embarrassed, hurt, and never be able to grow and become full. Whenever we want to try to influence someone, my wife drove a car right into a tree. She didn't realize it was in reverse. She was in the driveway. She put her foot on the thing and back down into the tree and messed up the car. Okay, so now I got to criticize, right? First of all, you don't, because it'll never happen again, so just forget the whole thing. But if I want to bring in a value of being a little more careful about things, or careful of my speech, careful of the way I interact with other people, I want to bring in such a value. So after step one of leading by example, step two is to notice that the person is not missing something. They're not bad because they speak a certain way. They're not evil. There's nothing negative about them. It's just that they want to grow more. You have to focus on the positive. In Kabbalah, this is a very, very big idea, that God always looks at the positive parts of the Jewish people. We have a lot of negative. But he looks at us as a positive whole. Because if you look at someone in the negative, you won't believe in that person to be able to grow. That person will not want to grow because they don't feel comfortable in your hands. They're not going to let you sculpt them. They're not going to let you mold them. They're not going to let you influence them. The only way someone can be influenced is if they feel that the person influencing them thinks of them completely as good. Yes, they made a mistake, but that's not reflective of who they are inside. Inherently, they're good. They're great. They made a mistake. There's something external that's negative, but that's not who they are. The only way we could ever influence someone else to change with us, to grow with us, is if we work to make sure that we see that person as good. And then by leading through example and always looking at the person as good, then the couple, the unit, is able to grow together. And I hope this is helpful. It was great spending time with you guys. Enjoy the rest of the trip.